In July of 1620, therefore, a massive army of some 30,000 troops of the Catholic League, under the command of Count Johann Tilly, and actually, interestingly enough, including a great many notable volunteers, the philosopher Descartes. It's not something one learns in a normal philosophy course, but Descartes went along on this invasion of Bohemia. And the army of the League first actually marched into rebel Upper Austria, which fell in a matter of weeks. Simultaneously, Duke John George of Saxony occupied Lusatia against almost no resistance whatsoever. Tilly, who had been in Upper Austria, then linked up with the other Habsburg forces, and they all marched inexorably into Bohemia. The rebels were trapped. On the 8th of November, 1620, they made a desperate stand on the so-called White Mountain, just outside the city of Prague. It was really no contest. The Catholics attacked quickly, and within less than an hour, the rebel army had been completely defeated. I'd like to review now what the situation was in 1620 after these Habsburg victories. In Bohemia itself, the Battle of the White Mountain, an utter Habsburg victory against the rebels, led to a truly ruthless imposition of the law of the conqueror. Something like 1,500 aristocrats, landowners and so on, were tried for treason, and almost half of them were condemned to lose at least part or even all of their property. If that wasn't drastic enough, the fate of the ruler's leaders, excuse me, of the revolt's leaders, was even grimmer still. In June of 1621, some 27 of them were beheaded. Their heads were stuck on pikes and then planted along the Charles River Bridge in Prague as a grim reminder to any other potential rebel. The final capstone of the Habsburg reconquest of the patrimonial territories was the promulgation of a new constitution, which was issued for Bohemia and Moravia in May of 1627. The provisions are really revealing. First of all, the territories ceased to become electoral monarchies. They were declared to be now the hereditary possessions of the Habsburg dynasty. The Habsburgs weren't going to have any more elections and promises and things like that, promises, as we've seen, in which they found difficult to keep. The privileges of the towns and the nobility were severely pared back, and all governmental officials were now made responsible not to the estates, the representative assembly, but to the crown itself. In the area of religion, orthodoxy was imposed ruthlessly. Catholicism was made the only official religion, and something like 30,000 Protestant families left Bohemia for exile elsewhere in Europe. In the patrimonial territories, therefore, the Habsburgs had an almost free hand to remake the territories in the image that they wanted. But in the rest of the Holy Roman Empire, among the member states, the member German states of the empire, the situation was really an awful lot more complicated. It is true that, as had been planned in Madrid, a Spanish army from Flanders had conquered the Rhineland Palatinate, the other half of the Palatine territories, in the summer of 1620. But all of these victories between 1619 and 1620 had really depended on a very careful and sensitive campaign of diplomacy, which needed to neutralize the various alliances which the Palatinate had built up in the years before the war, and in particular to isolate Frederick from any kind of supporter, any kind of potential support, especially among the other German princes. The problem which was now facing the Emperor Ferdinand II was how to keep Frederick isolated. Because there was always the danger that the German princes would become nervous that the Habsburgs were planning to remake the entire imperial constitution and turn an elective federal political system into an absolute monarchy. Indeed, a similar fate had actually befallen the Emperor Charles V in the middle of the 16th century. He had finally, in the late 1540s, pulled his forces together and defeated his enemies on the battlefield, the Protestants, that is to say, on 1547, and in 1548 had actually tried to change the constitutions of many German states. But, in a sense, his victories became self-defeating. They aroused only more opposition. Charles was defeated in 1552, and ultimately, as we've seen in an earlier lecture, gave the Protestants their rights, and resigned. But let's get back to the 17th century. After the Battle of the White Mountain, Frederick V of the Palatinate had gone into exile in the Netherlands. He left the Bohemians to their fate, and he skedaddled out of there. On the 21st of January, 1621, therefore, Ferdinand II, the Holy Roman Emperor, formally placed Frederick under the imperial ban. That is to say, he declared him an outlaw and deposed him from his territories. Now, the member states of the Protestant Union, of course, protested this ruling, but it should be pointed out that in the first place, according to the laws of the empire, it was entirely legal. And second of all, and strikingly, almost nobody was willing to fight for Frederick. They might grumble about how he was being treated, but nobody wanted to go to war for him. In early 1621, an effort was made to arrange a kind of ceasefire in Europe, and it was undertaken by James I of England, who was, as we've seen, the father-in-law of the Elector of the Palatinate. James was, in a sense, trying to rewind the clock. He was hoping that if he could get Frederick to give up the various claims he'd made to Bohemia that he could get Frederick to have his lands in the Palatinate and his title back. But there were true essential stumbling blocks to this, you know, fairly well-minded or well-intentioned plan. Frederick wouldn't play. He refused to make any unconditional renunciation of his claims in Bohemia, and moreover, the Spanish didn't want to play either. Having gone to the trouble of undertaking an invasion of the Rhineland and capturing the Palatinate there, they now had an invaluable link between northern Italy and the Netherlands, and they were loath to give it up.